Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another very exciting episode of the Friends Talking Fantasy Podcast. My name is Charles, and with me today, as always, is my lifelong friend and co-host, Dylan.
I'm ready to talk some fantasy with my friend Charles.
I am ready to talk some fantasy with my friend as well, Dylan, and not just any fantasy today, because today we are continuing our quest to figure out what was the best book we've read in the past year through the spirit of March Madness, even though we're at the beginning of April. But you know what? Some of these deliberations take a long time. We are doing our March Madness fantasy book bracket part two.
Yeah, I will say, though, the real March Madness bracket extends into April. So,
okay. Yeah,
college basketball bracket still happening. So, I think it's okay. Fair. We're just trying to stay true to what the NCAA does, the example that they've set. Yeah, we're going to approach this with the same vigor that UConn has been approaching the NCAA March Madness bracket.
They're doing well.
Just destroying everyone. I got cute in my bracket and was like, ooh, what if I have UConn go out in the Elite Eight? But and everyone was picking them to win, and it turns out that's because they're really good. But who will be the UConn of our current March Madness bracket for fantasy books? We're doing this single elimination fantasy book bracket. You hopefully have already listened to our discussion of the first half of the bracket. We already picked winners all the way through the final four. We're not going to say who in this episode, just in case. You don't necessarily have to read. You don't necessarily have to listen to these episodes in order. We'll just cover the second half of the bracket, come up with the other side of the final four through a series of single elimination showdowns between some of our favorite books that we've read this year. And then there'll be a final episode coming up that will be a showdown between the final four books. And it's only one can win, Charles.
Absolute showdown, Dylan, and only one can win, Dylan. I mean, we've got a lot of contenders here. We had a lot of huge contenders in the last one. I mean, we had like Robin Hobb going up against Brandon Sanderson. It got crazy. And now we're going to have
the first round.
And that was just the first round. So now we've got a bunch of other, you know, we picked our top 16 reads. So these are all big hitters from the past year. So I think we just go down the list and say them all really quickly, and then we just jump right into the first matchup. So our first matchup today will be Dune, the first book in the Dune series by Frank Herbert, against Gideon the Ninth from Tamsin Muir, some old school versus new school sci-fi. So yes, that will be a pretty exciting matchup. You have The Rage of Dragons by Evan Winter versus The Black Tongue Thief by Christopher Buhlmann. These are some breakout hits in the fantasy genre. Lots of really unique perspectives and voices there. The Battle Drum, Book 2 of The Final Strife by Sara El Arifi versus The Judas Blossom by Stephen Arian. So these are also two relatively new books in non-medieval Europe settings that I'm really excited to get into. And then the last matchup is The Bone Roots by Gabriella Houston versus Loki by Melvin Burgess, two new releases of the past year that are retellings of mythical stories and folklore story tales and things. So a lot of really exciting pairings here.
Yeah, Charles, you did a great job of summing up the things that these books have in common with the other one that they're showing down with in this bracket. And I think we just got to get going and start with this Dune versus Gideon the Ninth matchup. I mean, Dune, we're talking about a heavy hitter of a book. I've always kind of thought about it as the Lord of the Rings of the sci-fi genre, where it's shaped the genre so heavily. And we just read that not too long ago, based on
like
your
the last book that qualified. No, the last book that qualified was Legacy of the Brightwash, which competed in the last bracket. But this is the second most recent one that we've read that made it into this competition. And yeah, it's like you said, it's a titan.
Yeah, and it's going up against a very modern book, Gideon the Ninth, with a very modern voice. It's got that big pitch for it has always been lesbian necromancers in space. It's got kind of a meme-ish feel to the writing, and it is very contemporary and a breakout hit, especially via social media and all that kind of stuff. So in some ways, they are similar. That's why we pair them together. It's really the sci-fi type feel to it, but they are so different from each other. How do we pick between these two?
That is a great question. It's hard to imagine these two books getting compared very often, but it's fun, you know, because it's interesting to see how far the sci-fi world has come. And this isn't just any modern sci-fi book in Gideon the Ninth. It is, it was, you know, shortlisted for the Nebula Award, the World Fantasy Award, the Hugo Award when it came out in 2020. And the other books in the series that are out, I think, have gone on to be New York Times bestsellers in the Locked Tomb series, Harrow the Ninth, Known in the Ninth, and there's one more coming up as well. And people love these books, and we had a very good time with them as well, of course. Like, but what I'm saying is, like, modern sentiment is huge, and modern sentiment for Dune is also big because of the movies. But it's like this book is the it book right now. So, yeah, it's tough to choose, and the tones are so different. Like, Gideon has a lot of humor in it, and a lot of crass jokes and meme lore, as you said, Dylan. So, Dune doesn't have any of those things.
It does not have any of those things, but what it does have is really memorable characters that were written in a way that is, I think, so ahead of its time. Like, it feels to me, it wasn't that long after Lord of the Rings, and it feels to me so much more modern in its prose and its use of point of view than does Lord of the Rings. And it is also just full of these iconic things like the sandworms, like spice, and a really interesting message that I think was driven home a little bit better in the movie. But that being said, I'll also say, Charles, Gideon, for me, and I think you felt this way too, we appreciate what it was doing. We understood why it's been such a hit, but there was a little bit of a sense for us that maybe we weren't exactly the target audience with it. There were a few things that fell a little flat for us. There were some parts that were really funny, and there were other parts where, like, I don't know, like, I see why there's people who find this funny, but this is my sense of humor. And while I think a lot of folks would be picking Gideon, it's so many people's favorite books. I don't know. Dune, to me, kind of the whole Dune experience of the last year has been, really the last couple months for us, has been blowing my mind. So I'm kind of leaning Dune, if I'm being honest.
I mean, Dune is having a moment right now. You know, that cannot be ignored. And as much as Gideon the Ninth has kind of broken out and has been a huge success, and you know, I'm a big fan of the ending as well. The ending of the Dune book is not as good. So you got to give it props where it's deserved. And I love necromancy as like a magic system and kind of the mystery whodunit elements weaved into the plot of Gideon the Ninth. But at the end of the day, Dune is one of just those big influential works. Having such a moment right now, we got to pick it, right?
I think we have to pick it. So,
Dune moves ahead. Man, that is an early, early upset for poor Gideon. Like, Gideon could have gone all the way against many, many books.
Is it an upset? Like, I feel like if there were seedings,
it would have been an upset if it won.
Number one seed, just given its influence.
Given how popular the book is, and like the last book came out like just last year, in Known in the Ninth, or I guess 2022 now. Time is flying. We're overdue. But moving right along. We got two big, these are two of my favorites. This is going to be really tough.
this is going to be really tough. I don't know how we're going to choose between Rage of Dragons and Black Tongue Thief. I think so. We did do a when we were on SFF Addicts or that's what we did, right? We did our favorite reads of the last 23 year, and it was of 23 at that time. So some of these books weren't on there, like Dune. And I know you and I were kind of, we were fighting a little bit over, like, it didn't come to fisticuffs, but we were squabbling over the who gets to use Rage of Dragons, who gets to use Black Tongue Thief, because these were both very clear choices for among our favorite books that we read in 2023. That being said, Charles, that's a totally different format because you don't have to rank them in order. You don't have to choose one versus the other. So we didn't even think, oh, which one do we like better? Rage of Dragons, I mean, it's got this really unique setting. It's got this almost hyperbolic time chamber, like training montage element to that was so much fun. It's got a really unforgettable character and a very streamlined story for an epic fantasy. Like, it sticks to our main character, who is extremely interesting and changes a lot. I enjoyed that so much. Black Tongue Thief has some similarities there. Both are pretty dark stories. Black Tongue Thief has, I would say, humor going for it over Rage of Dragons, if we're trying to say, okay, what does one book do better than the other? I think Rage of Dragons will say action is its strong point. And Black Tongue Thief, where it sticks out, is it's got that grimdark with a great sense of humor tone to it, a la Abercrombie. Although very different books, very different authors, that's always what we think when we think grimdark with a sense of humor. It's got a roguish character. We listen to the audiobook with Christopher Buhlman, the author himself, doing this amazing accent and incredible performance. So, Charles, I don't know. How are we going to pick between these two?
Golly, it's going to have to come down at some point to personal taste. That's the only way. And even then, it's so hard because I was so thoroughly entertained by Rage of Dragons, this like gladiator-esque the moments, and then just the way that our main character pushes himself to become more powerful, the strongest fighter, and the price of achieving that, and the extent to which the magic system allows him to go is brilliant. And this was originally a self-published book, right? That eventually went on to be traditionally published, and now it's got these huge, you know, a huge sequel. So, I mean, that also, just a lot of respect for Evan Winter there. And then Christopher Buhlman, I don't know, he traditionally a horror author that just came out swinging in the fantasy genre. And I've been like a rising fan of his for the past year now since we've read this book. I've read some of his other stuff. We talked about Between Two Fires on the show a few months ago. And I'm just a huge fan of his prose, his background as like a poet and a Renaissance insult comic, like are coming through here in really strong ways. And I think a lot of people in the fantasy genre were taken with this book. You know, you got a lot of big authors coming to praise Christopher Buhlman, including Robin Hobb, Nicholas Eames, Mark Lawrence. It just hit the vein of like where our show kind of thrives in this particular genre of fantasy, of like grim, dark, epic fantasy, and added this new element to it of this like prose driven horror humor to the grim, dark nature of fantasy that I don't know, I just really love. So at this point, we just got to choose one, I feel like. But I'm getting excited talking about both of them. They're both great books. And Christopher Buhlman's sequel's coming out this year very soon, like in a couple weeks as of the time of this recording. And then you have, you know, we still have to read the sequel to Rage of Dragons, which I'm like, we're definitely reading this year. So these two are going to come back up again this year. That's how big of fans we are. So it's hard to pick.
It is hard to pick. Do you find yourself leaning in a particular direction, Charles?
I could be convinced either way so quickly. That's the thing. Like, if you came in swinging, I'd be like, yes, let's do it.
I don't know if I'm going to be coming in swinging per se, but and I'll just say, if this were the real March Madness bracket, this is one of those games you look back on. Here's a buzzer beater at the end, and you're like, wow, that was, I know that was one of the early round games, but that was one of the games of the tournament. And if only totally. Those teams could have moved on.
This could easily be a finals match.
Yeah, I can't entirely explain why here, Charles.
Okay.
But something in me is actually pulling a little bit toward the Rage of Dragons.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I can respect that. I feel like something a little bit was pulling me towards Black Tongue Thief.
Oh, I thought so. I thought so. Yeah.
Because I don't know what it is, but I'm just a big Buelman fan. But see, this is where we're like, what do we do when we have a tiebreaker? I'm okay. Like I said before, I'm okay with diverting to Rage of Dragons, if that's what you're thinking, because it's so close for me. But I do want to put on the record that my scale is slightly tipped to Buelman's favor. But I don't know. He's going to have another big year this year with his new release. I'm okay with giving it to Rage of Dragons. I was so thoroughly entertained by Rage of Dragons. Yeah. And like the power scaling element of it that makes me love stories like Dragon Ball Z so much was done so well here that I haven't read anything like that this year. We had some humor books and we've had some of those more horror books this year, but nothing quite like Rage of Dragons. So I'm okay with giving it to Evan Winter on that one.
Yeah, okay. Let's do that, just because that episode's gotta keep going.
The show
going.
Must we go on.
For
the show and, must go on. This could have easily been a semifinals, finals match. Like, Black Tongue Thief was one of my favorite reads of last year, as I've said on our 2023 Best Books discussion. So to lose in the first round is tough, but it was a hard matchup. Something's got to give. So that brings us to our next bracket. Dylan, would you like to introduce our two contenders?
Yes, we've got The Battle Drum by Sara El Arifi against The Judas Blossom by Stephen Arian. And this is tough, in part because, both awesome books, both very unique books, and then B, they're both friends of the show, Charles. Yeah. We've had both of them on. They're both super delightful people, Sara El Arifi and Stephen Arian, and it makes it tough because I just want to give both of those people a championship ring because they are deserving of it and they're great people. So that's always going to make it tough choosing between two friends.
Yes. We never want to have to choose between two friends on this show. We just want to talk to the friends about fantasy whenever possible. That's kind of our mission.
It's not friend choosing fantasy.
Not friends pitching friends against each other, you know?
Yeah, and that's not a good name for a podcast. It's too long anyway.
Yeah,
you need a little
clunky.
Even
clunky.
Friends talking fantasy is a little longer than we want, you know, because on TikTok I couldn't fit Friends Talking Fantasy podcast. We're one letter away from being able to fit that. So I just have to put Friends Talking Fantasy, which is not great because then they're like, what is this?
You could say Friends Talking Fantasy pod.
I thought about that, but I was like, is that better? Does everyone know when they see pod that it's a podcast at this point?
I think so, but who cares? What isn't a name, my friends? It's the story underneath that counts, and that's what we've got with these two heavy hitters here. Two nice wonderful stories. Thank you. That was a tough one.
So you don't get back from that.
The Battle Drum is the second book in the Ending Fire series by Sara El Arifi, and it has got this interesting, like, Middle Eastern, African-inspired setting, and it's got this magic system that's set by, like, literally people's blood has different colors, and that gives them different magical abilities, and then so there's a heavy class system involved. So you get this really creative, original story, and I don't know. In the first book, it was all centered around like a contest, and every day there was a different contest, and people were getting eliminated, and the story was very structured in that way. And this book, just like those guardrails came off, and this world just grew and expanded in significant ways compared to what we were exposed to in the first book. So it really spreads its epic fantasy wings here. And, you know, the main character is super interesting in how proactive she is and how just like strong she is. And then they try and weave in a relationship in this book. So she's showing a little bit of her softer side while also being like a warrior who had to grow up in a pretty tough environment. So like it's a really interesting dynamic with the battle drum. And then the Judas Blossom is, it's a retelling, I guess, of real historical events with real historical people of the Khans and the Mongolian Empire in Persia, invading Persia, right? And so it's almost like if you think of books like from Guy Gavril K, almost, although what Stephen Arion is doing is he's pulling real life people, adding a magic system, obviously dramatizing events and things like that. But I don't know, something about that just makes a really like cool, powerful cast. And then you kind of get pulled into the history lore as well. It adds like this meta element to the enjoyment of the series. But it's also, again, takes place in Persia, so you've got this distinct setting as well. And I think that's how we decided to pit these two against each other. It's just a shame that they're friends. And it's a shame that they're both really good books.
Yeah, I know. It's another tough one. I think that it's, geez, I think this side of the bracket has been even tougher than the other side.
But they're close matchups here.
Yeah, I'll say, to me, I really loved in the battle drum how she, you said this, like kind of just went all out in allowing the story to expand and to see all these different places and to get sprawling and epic in nature in a way that even the first book in this series didn't quite do. I think the Judas Blossom, while it's such an incredible start to the series, there are ways where I kind of think that the second book in that series is going to be even stronger with some of the things that they set up and how that first book ended, which we can't get into for spoiler-free reasons. I'm like, I kind of see this book leading into a second book that's going to be similar in feel to the battle drum, where it's like, okay, like now all bets are off. And I have a feeling that we might be coming back next year in March Madness time and saying a lot of the similar things that we were both just saying about the battle drum about book two in, Let me double check the name of book two. I know I saw the cover recently
of the Judas Blossom.
Yeah, and it's like the. Let me look at what book two is called. It's
so the series is called The Nightingale and the Falcon.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen a book two announcement.
I thought I did, unless I'm Nightingale and the Falcon book two. Am I out of... Yeah, okay, here we go. The Blood-Dimmed Tide.
Ooh. There is a lot of blood and action and massacres going on in that book. It's very entertaining. And it spotlights the real atrocities that, you know, took place in sacking certain cities and the reign of terror the Mongolian Empire had over the world at one point. So, I don't know, it was very interesting. And I learned a lot from that, too. And you can never take that experience away, either. So, and that's coming out this year, you said, the second book?
I believe so. Let me get...
don't hold us to it, but I think we're in agreement here that... I don't know, something about Sara El Arifi's work with The Final Strife has just stuck a chord on our show, and we bring her up constantly in Best Books of the Year, and we always take moments to spotlight and highlight her work, and I don't think this is any exception, right, Dylan?
Yeah, I think so, and I think, you know, when you're looking at a team in the Real March Madness bracket, college basketball, Charles, and I know you're a huge fan too, and you're like, oh, wow, like this team, they've got an incredible freshman who says that he's coming back next year. You've got, you know, veterans who are using that COVID extra year. They're like 24, 25 years old and still playing college basketball. And you're like, everyone's coming back. I think next year might be their year, but then they have an early loss in this tournament. You're like, okay, next year is going to be a deep run. That's kind of how I'm feeling with the series that we're dealing with here for the Judas Blossom. That's going to be a tough out next year. The Nightingale and the Falcon series, book two, The Blood Dim Tide, if it goes the way I'm expecting. So it's one of those, they'll be back. But
they'll be bad.
I think the battle drum, this is Sara El Arifi's time to shine.
And this was a big release, too, for her. So, like, yeah, big fan. Yeah, we'll just move on. Yeah. You know, the two great choices there. Read them both when you can. Golly, even the top 16 is tough to narrow down. Who would have thought?
The golly count, I think, is up to like three now, Charles.
I mean, I'm just gollying all over the place. I'm just like, holy smokes.
Gross.
Why did we do this to ourselves?
God. Yeah, it's tough. We've got Bone. Sorry. I'm having trouble with... What did you say? I'm gollying all over the place. That's dumb.
Yes, I may have said that. It's true, though.
We got Bone Roots up against Loki. They're another tough matchup. I think so. Bone Roots has this sort of fairy tale feel to it. It's extremely unique. I wouldn't even know what to compare it to exactly.
Yeah,
and then Loki. Yeah, Loki has been having a moment as well in terms of just the character of Loki. This is a retelling of the original Norse mythology that does draw a lot. Speaking of learning a lot from the Judas Blossom, I learned a lot from Loki about Norse mythology. There's things that happen in that whole story that Disney wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing this in the Marvels at all, you know.
I mean, I do not think that we're going to see all of those events adapted in any of these Marvel movies, but it was full of humor, full of incredible voice. I mean, Loki is telling you this story, and the way that Loki throughout is kind of, he's the master of lies, right? And he is kind of trying to tilt the story in his direction, and he's always painting himself kind of as this victim and always painting himself as like this reluctant hero as well. And woe is Loki, everyone's against him for no reason, and it's unfair. And I just absolutely love that, and I think that is really up my alley as a huge Rogue fan. So from a subjective, just if you're going to write a book for Dylan,
yeah,
it would likely look more like Loki than the Bone Roots, but the Bone Roots did an incredible job of capturing my interest and attention despite being a little outside of the realm of what I might typically read.
Well said. And to go back to your point on Loki, is Melvin Burgess is such a scholar on Loki and commits to the character so hardcore. Like, he was telling us stories about he would go to schools with like an acting troupe and he would play Loki and he would be like, kids, trust me and I'll give you candy if like join with me, you know, like he just commits to the point where some of the teachers are like, you can't just like promise them candy and then kill them all. It's like, well, that's what Loki would do. What do you want me to do? Like, this is the character, you know?
It was probably the Community episode. You remember where Chang is like playing drugs in a, don't do drugs, like, little play for kids. And he's like, gets them all enraptured with his character.
Yeah. And I think they're cheering for drugs. I remember.
Or that. It was Pierce who
it was got Pierce, them and then they brought out Chang to make them realize.
Because
Pierce, that's where he has like the clown mask and the sparklers. He's like, Pokemon.
Yeah, Chevy J is so funny. Pokemon. Like, do you think he knows what that word means?
He probably improvised it. He's like, I don't know what this is, but all I know is it's popular and kids like it, so I'm just going to scream it right now.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
So he would pull the same antics. I picture Melvin Burgess up there doing the same thing. And we love stories like The First Law and A Name of the Wind, where we commit to a character's perspective. And this, like, you made the point, Dylan, where it's like, woe is me. Like, I'm the best. How could this happen to me? Like, just like so focused on the Loki perspective and also being true to the Norse mythology tales from Loki, you get a really biased opinion and story. And that's part of the fun.
Yeah, I agree. So I think Bone Roots, incredible book, especially if you're into retellings, fairy tale style to it. It's so unique, and we recommend both checking out our interview with Gabrielle Houston and I pick up this book, especially if that sounds like your cup of tea. I think it was always going to be a tough matchup against a book that felt even more just like written for us and what we look for in books. So I think we're in agreement on Loki moving forward. Right. Another two friends of the show
We're just burning bridges right now. But no, Bone Roots was fantastic. It was Polish folklore that Gabriella Houston was pulling on for monsters, and her main character is a witch. And not quite like The Witcher, where you're like hunting different monsters and all that, but similar vein where like she understands the nature of these otherwise horrifying monsters, and she's able to, you know, work out arrangements and deals and sometimes thwart or enlist different like Polish folklore monsters. And so there's a mystery with like a twist at the end that's kind of built up throughout, and that was a huge driving force of the narrative as well. So if you're into those things, then check out The Bone Roots for sure. I had a great time with it. I mentioned in our interview with her, it saved me when I was stuck in an airport for 9 hours. They just kept delaying the flight, so it saved me, and I'll always be grateful for that story to being there for me at that time. So highly recommend. But Loki's just one of those wild, off-the-wall books that we discovered, and that, it's hard not to put that one forward.
Yeah, hard not to. Well, Charles, we've got two incredible Elite Eight matchups here. Mm. We've got Dune against Rage of Dragons, and we've got the Battle Drum against Loki. Let's talk here about Dune against the Rage of Dragons. Mm. I'm going to come out and say that the pure reading experience of these two books and nothing else, the Rage of Dragons for me was significantly more entertaining. Mm-hmm. I think that Dune, you got to take all the context into account, mm-hmm. and the movie, I mean, some of these other books would be in trouble if you put Dune Part 2, the movie, in this bracket. Because I was like, blown away by that
Fantastic movie of the year, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, Oppenheimer who, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, that was my favorite movie going experience that I can remember in any recent history for me. So, yeah, anyway, that
Avatar, Maverick, but that one is way up there for sure by a long shot.
Yeah. But Charles, I'll have to say part of why I love that movie so much is because I saw the ways in which the second half of the Dune book were beautifully adapted for a modern audience. Parts where it's like every single shift in the narrative, every single change that they made for that movie was an improvement over what Frank Herbert did for me in the Dune book. And when I think about that, I'm like, there's some ways in which it feels like Frank Herbert, and you got this a little bit already, kind of, I don't want to say botched the ending, but didn't live up to what I thought he was capable of based on the earlier parts of that book.
Yeah.
So, and that the actual like last part of it, like the ending of the ending, was like kind of weird. I won't go into exactly why because of spoilers, but I was like, what?
And yeah, it gets weird. Like any old sci-fi book does.
Yeah. So I actually find myself leaning toward The Rage of Dragons by Evan Winter for those reasons.
And here's the thing, right? Like, yeah, Dune's having a moment driven by the movies, you know?
Yes.
And then the other thing is Dune is an old book too, right? So it's like Frank Herbert's not going to be upset if we snub him on any kind of award.
I don't think Evan Winter will be upset either.
No,
I don't think he will ever catch wind of it.
So. But what I'm saying is Rage of Dragons is one of these modern stories that I think is ready to have a movie moment also. You know, like this would be so much fun to watch. Just a gladiator guy fighting Stranger Things monsters and then going into big epic fights. Like, it would be so much fun and so entertaining. And I think Dune's director, Denis Villeneuve, you know, we got to get these books in his hands. He'd do a fantastic job with them. And I have no problems pushing Rage of Dragons through either. Such a fantastic, entertaining story and one of the greats for sure. So Rage of Dragons moves along. Let's jump right to Battle Drum versus Loki. This is an interesting matchup I wasn't prepared for, I suppose. They're two very different books. two totally different tones, styles, everything. I mean, we've talked about these books at length. I'm willing to give it to Battle Drum right now, just looking at them. I feel like Loki in the end would be a very Loki thing to have happened, like just sneaking his way in there and just like somehow pulling it off. But as much as Loki was a fantastic book, it fits our niche taste, whereas Battle Drum for sure kind of is part of a Sunday Times bestselling series that we also emphatically enjoyed. And I don't know. We've been following the ending Fire Trilogy for a while now. I'm such a big fan. Like, I want to see it go to the semis, you know? I want to see it.
Yeah. I'm with you there, Charles.
Let's and not Battle Drum versus wise. Rage of Dragons? Like, oh, what? No. Now that's a matchup. Like, that's a matchup.
Well, let's save that for another episode here, Charles, because I don't even know how we're going to deal with that, but I'm with you. Let's not let the Master of Lies sneak his way past a book that's part of a series that you got at it well when you said this is a series that we're always returning to, always talking about, has had such a big impact on the way that we think about and discuss the genre. And while Loki was awesome and fun and funny, it hasn't had that level of impact on us in the show. So let's let's consider our final four set. We've got from this side of the bracket, Rage of Dragons against the Battle Drum, and we'll tell you that full final four in our upcoming episode, or you could just go back and listen to our first episode of the March Madness bracket, which was back in March. And we'll
finish it. It started in March, so it's a March Madness bracket.
Yes. Hey, that's what the NCAA says too. So I'm excited here, Charles. I think it's going to be really tough, but if there's anyone who can handle picking our own personal subjective favorite books in over the last year, I think it's you and me, Charles. I think most other people would be confused by the task of picking our favorite books.
Yes, and I think you're right, Dylan. I think we are especially equipped for the task, and so you don't want to miss it, guys. It's like the perfect scenario has come to fruition in our next episode. We have our top four books of the past year, and we are going to pick a champion, so you do not want to miss that. I don't know what we're going to pick. I'm looking at them right now. It's a tough call. Someone's got to win, though. There can be only one. For now, though, I don't think there's anything left to do except play that sweet, sweet outro music. What do we say?
Let's get that sweet, sweet outro music pumping, Charles.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, one and all, for listening to yet another very exciting episode of the Friends Talking Fantasy Podcast. If you like what you heard today and you want to support the show, best way to do that is engaging with us over on the socials. That's at the FTF Podcast on Instagram and TikTok, and at the FTF Podcast with a number one at the end on Twitter. Now, Dylan, if people like what they heard today and they want to support the show even further by engaging, and they've already engaged with us on social media, what can they do?
Toss 5 stars to our podcast, which you can do over on Spotify by clicking about right now for some reason, and then clicking where the stars are, throwing us 5 of those. It helps us a lot when you do that. You can also rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And by review, that means you can write nice things about us. You can say how Charles really nails those gollies. That sounds horrible. How Charles
golly
really...
Golly gee willikers.
Yeah. How, when you hear Charles say golly, you're like, you know, people don't use that word enough anymore.
I think I'm gonna hit him with the G Willikers pretty soon. That's another one. Yeah. That'll pull, yeah. I think. Bringing it back.
Right. But you don't have to comment on gollies or give us 5 stars, because just listening is more than enough. Thank you so much for doing that.
Well said, Dylan. Just listening. You guys are fantastic. Thank you for making it all the way to the end. You guys are awesome. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And as always, guys, go forth and conquer, friends.